welcome to the Delipod with me, James Delipod. And I know I always sound excited about this week's special guest, but it's not a special guest. It's just a guest. Hello, Dick.
Hello, brother. We're not very happy at the moment, are we? We're a bit angry.
No,
with
we're
things.
Not. I know we are.
We're going to have to get over it pretty quick as well, because otherwise we'll come across as moany old gits.
I know. And I'm feeling really rotten. And we've just had a sort of, it wasn't really a spat. We were just cross because we haven't got much time, have we? And you thought I was having an elaborate cassoulet lunch, and I wasn't. What I was doing was tech stuff to get it ready for you. How are you? I haven't seen you for ages.
I know,
ridiculous.
And this is, as ever, and people don't believe this when we tell them, this is a genuine catch-up of two brothers who haven't spoken for a while. People seem to think we're in constant touch with each other and, we're regularly communicating, but we just don't have the time, do we?
It's weird, though, isn't it? I mean, I haven't got a proper job anymore. You have. But I just wonder, where does all the time go?
Well, the proper job is definitely the best excuse I've got. But, without it, I would get so much done. I'm absolutely convinced. I suppose someone should step in and offer to pay for me to do the shit that I want to do. That would be ideal.
Yes.
A patron.
You need a sugar daddy or a sugar mummy.
Yeah, but without the implications.
Yeah. A sex-free sugar daddy or mummy.
That doesn't sound like the ideal offer to an investor, does it?
No, well, I think instead of offering your sexual favours, you'll be offering your wit and your charm and your moustache.
Well, and putting the world to rights. I mean, there's a lot to be done. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be put right.
I mean, you are in some ways, and I don't mean to insult you, but you are a bit like Toby in some ways.
Go on.
In that...
I can't wait to hear this.
Well, that you like... You're quite good at organising things.
So you've got your
third Wednesday, which has been when you go to heaven and they start handing out medals, you're going to get one for that.
Well, they'll probably still be doing it in heaven.
What?
They'll probably still have third Wednesday meetings in heaven, I should imagine.
Do you think they have medals in heaven? No, they probably don't, do they? It's probably not.
Kind of not with the humility thing, is it?
No. Dick, I'm so excited. I mean, I know I always say this, but I really am.
You're back on script again.
I've done this podcast. Which I haven't yet put up because I'm trying to sort of make sure that I don't get sued by satanic billionaires. Have you come across Jesse Sabatar?
No.
Dick.
I haven't come across any of the people that you have on your show until you... do them, and then suddenly they're famous, but I'm sure the two aren't connected. But I've written down the recent podcast, and I've had to catch up recently because there was a lot that went on.
I will never do a better podcast than the one with Jesse Sabatar.
What?
So I'll just whet your appetite. Jesse was selected at the age of about 3 and a half to be a Mother of Darkness, and there are five Mothers of Darkness in the Satanic Church, or I think it's called the Brotherhood. It's the organization that really rules the world through the various satanic bloodlines, of which there are 14 apparently, according to Jesse, not 13. And how you get selected to be a Mother of Darkness is, and that means you are top of the hierarchy. There's five, so it's the equivalent of being, Pope or something. I'll bet the Pope would give his eye teeth to be a Mother of Darkness, wouldn't he?
And now the Vatican will be soon.
Maybe he's lower down in the Satanic Council. But you get chosen partly because of your bloodline, but partly because of your ability to communicate with Satan and the various demons. And I heard this on another podcast, so I'm not spoiling anything. So her proctor, who is the sort of her handler, the person who selects her and checks that she is the one, tests her by saying, you know, what is Satan saying now? Can you repeat what he's saying now? What he's saying to you? And she says, he's saying, oh, whatever. And
Charlie says,
of course, she demonstrates that she, yeah, Satan.
Right. Always tell Satan your mummy before you go off somewhere.
The thing I didn't ask her, or rather I did ask her, but I asked her after the podcast had finished. I said, well, what's Satan's voice like?
Ooh.
And how I guess what Satan's voice is like.
Is it like the Charlie Says advert? Is it?
Yeah, it's not like Charlie Says. No. That would be cool. No, it's... So it's going to go one of two ways, and I guessed right. It was either going to be
I would have gone for
darkness.
That. Yeah.
Or it's going to be really rich and sort of fruity, and I don't know, maybe like Stephen Fry or something sort of, or James Mason, or, you know, something like that. So actually, James Mason, I bet the devil talks like James Mason.
The master wants you.
Anyway. She didn't mention James Mason, but she did say the devil has a really pleasant voice, as he would. Wouldn't
because he was in charge of music. Yeah.
In charge of music as well, as we learned from Alistair Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Jessie has given me the complete inside track on heaven and hell. She's been to both. And on, you know, you could listen to this podcast and go, this woman is a very accomplished serial liar. She's just invented this extraordinarily elaborate and vaguely plausible sounding scenario in which there are these worshippers of Satan who are, you know, and this is how it works. Or she's for real. And I have to say, I think she's probably for real. Anyway, it's an absolute treat. You're going to be...
Well,
you won't.
It would be amazing if it's better. I'm referring to my list here. If it's better than Father Vincent Lampert, because he was outstanding guest. It was just brilliant. It was amazing.
The Exorcist. He was and good. He was very, very good.
He was so tolerant of your Dillingpolisms as well. You know, when you were going, tell me about your favourite exorcism. He would just chuckle.
How else are you going to discover what his favourite exorcism is?
No, but this is why people like your podcast, because they ask the questions that they would never, you know, would think were too cheeky to ask. But this is the stuff you want to know.
One of our friends who was listening to the podcast felt that he rather pulled his punches when I asked him about satanic elites or Satanism at high levels in the US. And my reply was, yeah, well, he belongs to an institution which is incredibly career safe. I mean, yeah, it's like being a Catholic priest, particularly a sort of a state exorcist. It's like being a kind of a departmental manager, isn't it? In a big corporation.
No, he's got a lot to lose by, you know, stepping out of line too much. I mean, all the vicars that I know, and I'm getting to know a few now, they all have their red lines, and you know, they will only go so far in rocking the boat. But it's an interesting one. That there was a lot of Twitter activity on this whole subject today about the doctors who didn't speak out during the pandemic, and based on that article in the Daily Skeptic. And it's easy to judge them, isn't it? It's easy to say, well, he bloody well should have spoken out, which is kind of where I'm at. Yeah. But, you know, you've got to be in their shoes. And I suppose, you know, you've lost friends, followers, work and what have you in sticking to the truth. So, I suppose you'll have less sympathy.
Yeah, I do have less sympathy. I found it a piece of piss doing what I've done. I mean, I have absolutely no regrets at all about having cast loose cast loose from the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
And I no longer crave the company of all my old journalist friends that I used to consider my comrades in arms, because, as you know, it's Guadalcanal, and I'm in the foxhole, and the Japanese
are coming
in droves.
You're going to Guadalcanal these days, eh? It used to be Bastogne.
Bastogne was the original scenario, but I'm referring specifically to the scene in Pacific, where
I haven't seen Marines Pacific.
Are holding. Ah, okay. So they're holding
a bit of a tilde for me, really. But
he's in his foxhole, and it's a night fight, and you know, there's tracer all around, and suddenly his buddy collapses to the floor, and he thinks he must have been hit. And the guy, he looks down and he realizes the guy hasn't been hit at all. He's just sort of cowering, and he's lost his nerve.
All right.
You don't hate them. I don't hate them. I just feel rather sorry for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think being cowardly is a very edifying thing. I mean, I don't think it makes one very happy. I don't know whether
it'll destroy their souls. So those who come through this knowing that they could have spoken out and didn't, and especially if you're a doctor, people are going to be dead thanks to you. It's not a good look. You've frozen.
Yeah, well, you froze there as well.
Okay.
I've got my new Elon Musk internet.
Right. How's the Elon Musk internet?
It's Starlink.
Oh, right. For people in third world countries like your county.
Yeah. I've been telling people on my Telegram channel that I think that Elon might be the Antichrist.
Oh, right.
Because the thing about the Antichrist, I don't want to go too much into this, because I think I want to do a few speciality podcasts with people who know about end times and Revelation and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the normie in the street has this idea that the Antichrist is just like the devil, or is the devil. In fact, somebody on my Telegram group actually thought the Antichrist and the devil were the same people. They're not. And the Antichrist, for starters, is not obviously evil. He'll seem to be really like fun, the kind of person who would light up
a
joint.
You've read Mark Miller's American Jesus, haven't you?
Yes.
Isn't it?
I think it's his masterpiece, actually.
I mean, I've only just come, without wanting to do spoilers for anyone, I've just come to the end of the, I'm reading the bound graphic novel version, and I've just come to the big revelation, so to speak, and it's like, whoa, didn't see that coming. But yes, he's the great deceiver, isn't he? I mean, Satan is. He's not going to send someone with a red face and horns, is he?
No. He's not. I think I've been heading in this direction for quite a long time. And some people who've come with me down the rabbit hole, or not many actually that there's come down the rabbit hole, because the ones who've come down the rabbit hole, I think, have shared my journey. They're like the ancillary hobbits that come with Frodo and Sam. What are the other ones called? The ones with the stupid Irish accents.
Oh, God.
But Jesus, I'm a hobbit.
No, Sam is Mr. Frodo, sir. Don't forget your elven sandwiches. Are they? I should know.
There's
this
two
stuff.
More.
Anyway, the other ones.
The ones that are really shit. You remember the moment where they make a stupid fire because all they can think about is they're hungry.
Second breakfast.
And you just think, stupid bloody
hobbits. They deserve
hobbits.
To get carved up.
They did, didn't they? Actually, you kind of want them in that scene to be
a bit like all the characters in The Rings of Shit, which is currently gracing our television.
Dick. Yeah, well, I think let's go down this avenue. How far have you got in ring pieces of
rings
shite?
Rings of shite. Funnily enough, we watched the first episode because, you know, like you, I've got to negotiate what we watch every evening with the missus, and we've both got to want to watch it. And I said, look, should we just give it a go so that we can at least talk about it? And so we
can
did.
Help Mr. Bezos make some more money.
Yeah, well, he's made it anyway, hasn't? But we can join in the taking down of it if we watch
Important.
Ridicule. And it does actually worry me slightly that everyone is watching it so they can hate it, which means people watch it anyway. It's like burning books. I mean, you've got to buy them in the first place, haven't you? But anyway, that's a digression. It is so shit that even the missus doesn't want to watch it anymore. And I want to watch it so I can hate it and so I can laugh at the elves and wish death upon the half-feet and what have you. But you just want them all to die horribly, don't you?
Have you got... Which episode have you got to?
I think I've only watched two episodes, maybe three.
Have you seen the fight scene in the orc compound?
Only in what I've seen by watching people take the piss out of it on YouTube. The ludicrous, over-the-top choreographed fight scene when Yas Queen is rolling around and taking them all out.
No, I haven't seen Yas Queen do her thing. That's the episode I haven't seen. I find her so uncharismatic.
Yeah.
And like, she's not like the Galadriel in the book.
No, I think you can forget about that. The two are completely unrelated. They share only a name. But it's just.
Were you disappointed by how okay Lenny Henry is?
I still can't get over the fact that this intermixing of let's have a bunch of black characters for no plausible reason, like a black elf with no precedent to it, and some of them are black, some of them aren't. It doesn't seem to run in the family. I wanted plausibility on why these characters are black or Chinese or whatever else they are. But there doesn't seem to be any plausibility to it.
This is the problem I have with the other shite series on TV at the moment, the Game of Thrones prequel.
Are you not liking Dragons?
No, I'm not. Oh, I'm really not. You can tell me your thoughts in a moment.
But, okay,
so there's the Black Sir, isn't he? What's he called? Sir?
Are the ones the black family with white hair?
So there's a black family with white hair, which... I'm cool about that. I'm not racist in it. You know, maybe there were these black knights that George Martin forgot to mention in
the main body of work.
It's called Game of Thrones. Mm. but it just turns out that sort of like centuries before there were black knights and so on. But so you're watching and you're waiting for it to be explained what their relationship is with. In this world, you know, why they're black rather than white, like all the other characters. And it's never explained. And you realize that at that point that you are being invited by the program not to notice their skin color. Now, that is what I have a problem with. It's like, I'm really okay with black characters if their ethnicity and relationship to
it's the same argument as 1917 and the number of... black Tommies there were in 1917, and argument was constantly misinterpreted as, oh, these racists don't think there were any black and Indian soldiers in the trenches, oh how wrong they are. And that was never the argument. The argument was the number of them, which regiments they were put in, how they happily mixed up Sikh fighters and other units in an implausible way. They're deliberately going for the straw man sort of argument. So you're saying there weren't any, are you? But it's deliberately setting us a bear trap that we walk into so that, you know, we can be called racist again.
Yeah. The what are they called? The libtard, the shit libs absolutely love the argument about how because elves and dwarves and hobbits are fantasy creatures, that anything goes, and that, you know, it's perfectly okay to make them different races because they never existed, why not
have some that can fly then,
yeah,
or can breathe underwater? Yeah,
exactly, why not?
Yeah, let's go.
So,
for
Dick,
it
tell me, I have almost died of the grinding tedium of willing the Thrones thing to get interesting. Tell me why it's not shit.
Because it hasn't yet done an Arya killing the White Goblin thing. What's he called?
It's good because it hasn't gone really bad.
Well, Game of Thrones was great until it wasn't.
This is like saying, I can't even go there, Dick. It's just like, are you not?
But you know, I've
with?
Got a much higher tolerance for shit than you. I can put up with a fair amount of crap because I'm just in mong mode in the evening. I'm sat in front of the TV for the last hour of the day. I don't watch it till 9 o'clock, and from 9 until I completely doze off at 10, I just want something that'll see me through and wipe out the last few brain cells. So I'm really not overly bothered. As long as it's got a fairly good plot and it's fairly well acted, I don't mind Matt Smith.
You are. Do you know what? You're a lot more like Toby than I credited even at the beginning of this podcast, because Toby does that. If anyone still listens to London Calling, it's only really worth it for me. But every week, Toby makes a recommendation, and then I say, "Yeah, but Toby, was it any good? Was it?" He said, "Well, not really.
Right.
Maybe he's like me
in that he's scared of saying something's good in case you come back and completely trash it, thus humiliating him."
But there have been some good things on TV. Not many of them. Slow Horses was really good. The Offer on Paramount is really good. Although it does involve subscribing to Paramount. Mm. I'm quite enjoying The Old Man on Disney. Even though to believe, you have to suspend a lot of disbelief. You have to believe that the CIA and the FBI are essentially good organizations which serve the American
people.
That is
the problem of being increasingly awake, is that you've got to suspend ever more disbelief every time you watch something, and it becomes more and more challenging. And it can be quite tedious when one's wife sees you audibly huffing and just rolling your eyes audibly.
Well, surely the secret is not to let one's wife see one doing these things, because one's in enough shit with one's wife.
They sense it. They know it's going on. Even just generally gently shifting in your seat, and they cast their eyes sideways and they see that you're uncomfortable with a scenario. But you can't win on that front. They know all.
Once
and they
you realise that the prime purpose of the entertainment industry is not to entertain you and divert you. Well, actually, maybe it is to divert you. It is to brainwash you, to reinforce what our friend Cliff High calls the narrowdyme, the sort of the fake paradigm, and mm-hmm. they create the narrative. So I will never ever watch another new James Bond movie. I mean, I can accept the old ones for nostalgia purposes, but the James Bond promulgates the lie that A, the Secret Services are fighting for you, and that B, your country is something to be proud of and chauvinistic about, and C, that our friends at the CIA are there to help us. And none of this stuff is true. It's all a massive lie.
No, I'm completely with you there. But as I say, it's just another thing you have to cast aside in your mind to enjoy these things. Can I run one final before we move off our culture corner version of?
Yeah, run a thing with me.
Something that I've started watching recently. Is it called... I can't even remember what it's bloody called. Why have you got me when I must be
is
having...
Is it called Bear?
No,
is
it's
it
not
about
called
a chef?
Bear. No. Okay. It's
not about a chef.
No, I'm going to have to come back to it or talk to me about another time. I don't know
is
what
it about
you're working
with
on
a roundabout in it, which is magic. Is there a character who looks a bit like you and goes boing?
Why have I lost you your visuals, by the way?
Oh, it doesn't matter. You don't ignore it because you're just drawing the listener viewer's attention to something that they can't see. Because
I didn't realise. I thought they might see what I'm seeing.
No, it's recording locally. That's the thing about Riverside. I paid for this shit, Dick.
One of the things that we've got to talk about at some point. This is now moving away from Culture Corner. You're doing this comedy thing, and I'm apparently going to it. Yeah.
By the time we shouldn't talk about it because by the time people see this, it will probably have sold out. And it's tragic. There's only 300. I'm going to do another event. I think at the in London, you know, early next year, if there is still a next year, if it hasn't been cancelled because of the war that they want with evil Putin over, you know, to defend their child trafficking state. Yeah, there's only like 300 seats. I mean, it's such a kind of no-brainer of an event.
Yeah, but how amazing the way the Duchess of Burnley made it happen so quickly.
The Duchess of Burnley, she jostled me in. She was like a Nazi guard, sort of
poking you with a cattle prod, saying, "Make us laugh."
She just jabbed me with the butt of her Mauser. Do they have Mausers?
Not in a concentration camp, I wouldn't have thought.
What do they have?
Well, they wouldn't need them. It'd just be sticks. I mean, is she a capo or is she an actual prison guard?
No, I don't know what she's. I just meant she with the butt of her rifle.
Okay.
Anyway,
it would be.
She made me
then.
Do it. I tried to resist, but it was futile. Yeah. I quite like organised people.
Yeah, well, we need them in our lives. And it's sad to think that you consider me organised, because that's a really low bar.
You have what's that book you've got called?
Which book?
Filofax.
Yes. 1986 vintage. Everything is in there.
Can you still get papers for it?
Yeah. You get them every year. It's got all sorts of great stuff in. Yeah.
It's like, but if you told me that you had a chopper outside, or a space hopper.
Look, I've got
I couldn't be more impressed.
That's my student union card from when I was at.
Look
how pretty I am.
Yeah, I know. It's awful how pretty we used to be.
Yeah, this is why I need to keep these things around me.
Yeah.
Anyway, these are all things in my file effect. Yes, talking of chopper outside. You've just been following my feed, no doubt, that I have just bought a Vespa. How exciting is that?
Dick, even though I took the piss saying that you are a Paul Weller fan.
Yeah, that's just not going to happen, is it?
Do you know, and do you know what your favourite Paul Weller is?
Probably the really late shit stuff. Yeah, Style Council. Yeah.
You love the Style Council, don't you?
Mm. Yes. And I'm going to start
wearing all their songs, can't you?
Go on, I couldn't even name one.
Yeah, that is what a true Style Council
moods. Is that one of theirs?
That's what a Style Council fan would say if he hide his allegiance.
So I'm going to be the Weller going up and down the high street on my Vespa whilst wearing, what do they wear? What are the brands?
Modsids.
Give me some brands.
Oh, no, they wear...
Fred Perry.
On Quadrophenia, they wear those parkas.
Okay. So anyway, this is just for me to pootle around town and get to work and the swimming pool and the gym and stuff like that. It just didn't seem worth getting a big grunty motorbike to do that. So I thought I wanted to do it in a stylish way. So I've been looking for a Vespa for a while. And this thing's 20 years old, so it's not exactly sparkly and new.
I think one might as well milk... possibly the last year where we're going to be allowed to use motorised transport. Picture the scene.
It's going to be French resistance style activity. And instead of going around on bicycles with strings of onions, we're going to be nipping around to resistance headquarters on scooters because they're the only thing that we can afford to run. So that's my vision anyway.
I'm dreading having to get a bicycle and... you know, when the fuel all does run out and being mistaken for a cyclist.
I have to live with that ignominy every day.
Racing bike. I hate racing bikes so much. They're so, the position is so stupid.
Well, and get a hybrid. That's what I've
would
got.
Would I have to get a shiny coloured outfit as well with tight fitting?
Not necessarily.
Get a third testicle.
No.
No. I mean, obviously, being able to ride, I'm at an advantage. But I think what's going to happen pretty quickly is all the horses are going to get eaten.
That never seems to happen in the post-apocalyptic movies, does it? There always seems to be squadrons of
I was going to let the dog go and see the wife who's just come back. Cause
okay,
let
the dog see the rabbit.
What were we saying? Your scooter.
Scooter, horses, post-apocalyptic transport.
Have you painted the scooter yellow and blue?
Of course. It's already blue, so obviously all it needs is a yellow top half, or is it bottom half? But
that's good.
That'll clearly be what I'll be doing.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk to me about things that you've thought about, or not?
In as much as me sort of following you about 6 months behind you down various rabbit holes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, obviously...
You don't have to.
At the risk of boring the non on board with the God people, that the Thursday Circle thing is going well. And actually, a fair few of the original Third Wednesday crowd are there with me. You know, we talk about favourite psalms and things like that, and it's good and it feels good and it's working really well, so that's all that needs to be said about that. But do
hello
you know,
I'm just doing a podcast with Dick.
So just a shout out for Thursday Circle, and you can go to thursdaycircle.com to find out more about that and how you set one up for yourselves and your friends.
I'm doing a podcast with Dick.
That's that out of the way, okay? Because I don't want to go on about it, because I know we have a tendency once we do the God bit, it carries straight on. But I have completely nailed Psalm 91 now. I'm not going to be jumping onto any more just yet, because I want to make sure that those are completely set in my addled brain, because it can only take so much learning by rote.
Yes. I think you've kind of answered my question, because I've decided to go ahead with this psalm series, where I've decided not to do it just me, although it'd be easier in a way. I thought each week or each episode I would talk about a different one with a special guest.
Oh, is this a completely separate podcast?
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about this. Take me from the top.
Well, that's it.
Or have you just done so?
I'm just... Oh, yeah, exactly. I've done it now. So what I want from you, and this is what people don't realise, that this is an actual live conversation where we're just talking about... We haven't... Dick and I have not spoken about this because...
Unbelievably, this is not scripted.
No. No, I know.
Slick as it may look.
Yeah. That I thought I'd ask you which one you wanted to do, and I'm guessing the answer is 91.
91 would be great, but I've got no insider knowledge of it, except for the fact
that I
know it and love it.
No, but what I'd do, we'd both go, it'd be a bit like one of those programs where we both went off and did a bit of research, and this is what I found, Dick. And you could,
that's fair enough. Because I did a podcast like that about Brave New World, and I'm about to do the same sort of thing for Infinite Jigsaw podcast, and I'm about to do the same with 1984. So I had to reread both those books, and also did a bit of background reading on, you know, the circumstances under which they were written. Oh, and since then I've read That Hideous Strength, which I will probably also cover with him at some point.
Yes.
So that was good.
That is That is the trio of books that are sort of relevant to the sort of dystopian.
Yeah, I didn't realise that the third one in the trio would be such a thing. But, you know, it covers it from a different angle. I found the end a bit annoying, but a bit silly.
Oh, we should talk about this. Have you noticed this thing that's been going on recently where, like, everyone is controlled opposition. Anyone with any profile at all is secretly working for the enemy.
Yeah, you know, of course. I mean, you're a shill, I'm a shill, David Icke's a shill.
I mean, in some cases, it's very likely true. In fact, probably in many cases, it's very likely true to a degree, but which is why we always say that you need to use your discernment and take what's useful to you and discard what is not, put not your trust in princes, as it says in, where does it say it, Dick?
Am I supposed to know what chapter it is and everything from?
I think you need to know what psalm it is.
Psalm it is.
Have a guess. Right.
Well, it's none of the two that I know.
Well, go on, just say a number and see if you get it right.
37.
No. I think it's 146. The thing I was kind of segueing into is, have you ever come across Miles Mathis?
No.
I don't know whether he is a single individual or whether he's a kind of a collective of, or whether he's a kind of CIA front or whatever. But he goes into these incredibly elaborate genealogy related disquisitions on different people. So there's one on he does one on Harry Potter on J.K. Rowling, and decides after looking into her ancestry that she's one of the bloodlines and that the whole thing was somebody else told me this. I think it was Alex Thompson, I think, mentioned en passant that Beatrice and Sidney Webb, the sort of Fabian socialists who were friends of George Bernard Shaw, had essentially constructed a very similar plot line to the Harry Potter. You know, this thing had been, there was a theory that Harry Potter was written by a committee and was ultimately about promulgating Satanism and black magic and stuff, and, you know, encouraging the kids to get down with it. Anyway, Miles Mathis did another one on C.S. Lewis, and it's, I mean, huge if true. His thesis was C.S. Lewis's writing, his novels are basically pretty substandard, and particularly his science fiction trilogy, of which That Hideous Strength is the final episode. And he says the reason they're shit is that, because I mean they are, I mean as literature they don't work that well. I think some of the ideas he explores are very, very good. You know, the idea of the inner circle, for example, that all the contortions you have to go through in order to get to climb up the greasy pole and be admitted to the inner circle, that's mm-hmm. really spot on satire. But I think as a novel it doesn't work very well.
No, so I agree.
Mathis says this is deliberate, because C.S. Lewis is working for the other side. And he then goes into detail about C.S. Lewis's biography and highlights the dodgy moments where C.S. Lewis could have been compromised. And one of them is he mentions Malvern College. And he says that he brings up the fact that the CIA chief, James Jesus Angleton, was also educated at Malvern, and he said, and I think he brings in Aleister Crowley as well, and from this he constructs this elaborate thesis that the greatest, one of the greatest literary apologists for Christianity of the last century or so was actually you know a Luciferian or working for the other team. So what do you think?
Well, I think it's a long shot when you consider everything else he'd written, and you know, even just Screwtape Letters, it's clearly on side for Christianity. I mean, if it's a shill, surely the cover is so deep that he's a triple agent.
Yeah. Well, of course, there are those on our team, and I love them, but I haven't gone that far yet, who think that the illusory nature of the world is so great, and that the workings of the devil are so elaborate and so malign and so all encompassing that pretty much everyone is you know contributing to the descent into darkness, that maybe even we are, we don't even know it. I don't know.
Yeah, it starts to get a bit silly at that point, at which point you've got no opposition, have you? You've got no, there is no fight back, because we're doing what the left always do, is like, you know, fighting amongst themselves to the point at which they've destroyed each other. I mean, you put four leftists in a room and leave them together.
They would destroy. They don't, do they? They actually use it to destroy us somehow. I don't know how they get away with that.
No.
But you're right. I mean, there must be some goodies out there, mustn't there? Surely.
Well, you've got to trust your instincts, haven't you? This is why meeting people face to face and IRL is so important. This is why you've got to, you know, you see when they're in front of you that whether or not you're going to trust them. Online is a little bit different, but you meet people, you know, don't you?
You can look into their eyes, apparently, so I've heard.
And if they're black, that's not good.
Yeah. One of the people we mentioned earlier, Lenny Henry.
Right.
You've seen the goat eyes.
The what?
Some of them have eyes. They have goat eyes.
Right.
You must have seen this.
I didn't think I could be paying attention.
Well, there are photographs. I mean, there's the other thing. There's Senpaku eyes, I think it's called. You know, where they're just black, which is obviously. That they've gone, but there are also people who've got goatee eyes. I see it,
right?
And I mean, probably there are people with the green eyes, with the lizardy slit things,
like a secondary eyelid,
like the Exorcist saw,
right? Are we still talking about Lenny Henry in Lord of the Rings, or the Rings of Shit?
I'm talking about him. No, I'm talking about him being the real person.
Oh right, okay. I haven't seen Lenny Henry goatee eyes, no.
Well, do you know about is she his ex-wife now, Dawn French?
Dawn French, ex-wife,
Are they still married?
No.
You know the Vicar of Dibley?
Yes, and inverted crucifix.
Inverted crucifix. And you know what they say when they're accused of this?
No, what do they say? St. Peter's cross or something like that.
Yeah, it's the inverted cross, and it's because he chose to be, he was so holy, he chose to be crucified upside down or something like that.
Yeah, he didn't want to be crucified,
and you're thinking,
in the same way as Christ.
Okay, so this sort of New Agey vicar, who's obviously rarely never demonstrates any sign of actual belief in Christianity, her character, I don't think. I mean, how could she? She's written by Richard Curtis.
Mm.
This character is somehow secretly so religious that she's decided to have the inverted cross to symbolize.
They really did try
that
as an answer for this, did they?
Oh, they do. It's like, well, because when you want to find something is true and you're pretty sure it's true, and then you go on the internet, don't you? And you find the fact checkers explain to you, it isn't. No, it's not what you think. It's just a lie. It's just a conspiracy.
Aren't fact checkers great?
I love fact checkers.
They do our job for us in a way.
They do.
You know, if it's been fact checked and actually you're wrong, you just sit back and say, yep, right. I know I'm right then.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
In fact, it may not even be true until it's been fact checked as a lie.
That's true. Yeah. They make untrue things true through their fact checking or something. So what are you going to say to me about other things?
The other thing, you know, the approaching Armageddon and the winter of discontent, and we're all going to freeze and starve and die and stuff.
Yeah,
you've presumably got proper fires in your house.
No. Do you know why?
Why not?
Because the stupid rooks and jackdaws
have nested made in your
their
chimney.
Nests in the chimney.
Right.
And we had the chimneys done, and the people said, oh yeah, we've sorted out, they can't nest there again. But stupid gits only did one of the flues.
Right.
And the other flue is blocked. And so that fire is unusable. So we're going to freeze our asses off just like everyone else.
You better get that sorted before the cold comes in, because I'm looking to have wood burners put in, and it's not going to be cheap, but surely better than freezing to death. But that is upmost in my mind right now. I know it's a really boring thing, but actually there's a lot of people talking about wood burners right now. They've sold out in Germany. You can't even get them.
I'll bet the price of wood as well has rocketed. I know the price
that
of
as well.
Coal is...
Yeah. It was your mate trouble. Gove who tried to put a stop to wood burners, wasn't it?
Yeah, I like the use of the word my mate.
Well, I thought I'd get that
it's
one.
It's weird, isn't it?
Mm.
I'd
Do you have
to,
any
I'd
mates
know...
anymore?
No. Well,
former acquaintances.
My mates are my new constituency, aren't they? They're my people. They're the people, like the ones who went to the Freedom Festival and stuff, and the ones who are going to come to the comedy gig, and the ones who are going to come to the other gigs.
Yeah.
Because they've got the light in them.
Mm-hmm. So who are you going to do for the comedy gig?
What do you mean?
Who's going to be your
guest?
Sex with? No, who's going to be your guest? I didn't think it was that sort of show.
Oh, to be decided.
Oh, right.
To be
okay.
decided.
Right.
I mean, I've got a few people lined up. But Assistant Ben reckons it just book the gig, decide what, you know, the date is, and then work out who it's going to be afterwards.
So flying by the seat of your pants, as usual.
Well, I'm hoping that I don't know. The last one didn't make very much money because we got so shafted by I actually don't want to talk
no,
about
don't,
it. It's
just don't
too
go
depressing.
There.
No, it's just not. It's just like, yeah. I mean, I suppose you get your fingers burned in order to learn lessons. I mean, this is what it's like being an entrepreneur, isn't it? You just make all these mistakes and you have a couple of businesses.
Hopefully
going,
only
and
make
you
them once.
A billionaire after that. I think that's the idea. We left
can't
it a bit
wait
late,
for that
think,
bit.
Though.
Yeah, we've left it very, very late.
Yeah. So where are we going with this? I've forgotten.
We're talking about the comedy show, and I've forgotten what we were on before that. But I've got my list here that I can to fall back, because you've got Alistair Williams joining you for the for that show, haven't you? He's one of the other acts.
He'll be
he's
really
someone who didn't toe the line and lost everything, and he's a great example of someone who lost everything because you have to before you can completely come back the other side. So he's another one who probably wouldn't be regretting his taking that stance.
Yeah.
Like you.
Well, exactly.
But that was a good podcast. But he was heavily into God, isn't he? He's got it bad.
Well, but why wouldn't you be? I mean, if
it's about being
times.
Circumspect about it, and you sometimes mention not scaring the horses, and I still think that's quite important, because we know what we felt about full-on Christians when we were both normies. And it's kind of a bit of an eye roll, isn't it? And I fully expect we still get a lot of that from people who in every other way are on board with what we believe, but can't quite do that Christian thing. And
yeah, I can sort of understand that. What I can't understand are the people who totally understand that the vaccines, which aren't vaccines, were unnecessary, and that this is a depopulation exercise, and that Big Pharma is evil and stuff, and the government lied to us again and again and again, and that the NHS is there to kill us, and so on. The people who get all that, I don't get the ones who nevertheless believe that we really should go to war with Putin over this child trafficking, money laundering, gun running state funded by the deep, used by the deep state for its nefarious purposes. Why is that? I don't understand how people can disbelieve everything they read in the newspapers about COVID, but believe everything they read in the papers about Ukraine. How does that work?
It's kind of like a plane, a propped plane going straight up into the air. Yeah. And we're just keeping on going straight.
That's called a helicopter,
up.
Isn't it?
No. Think of a plane that does tricks and stuff like that. At some point, when you're flying directly up, you're going to stall, aren't you? Because you get through the COVID thing, you'll get through so many other things. But Ukraine, they can't quite make it. And they go into a stall and they're diving down. So it all depends on how powerful an engine you've got that you can see yourself through all that and how much fuel you've got. And you can just keep blasting on. But a few other people are going to be peeling off, having only got so far. That's the analogy that immediately springs to mind.
Right. Well,
not everyone has got the trajectory to take you all the way there.
Right. But why would you choose? You mean it is the position of convenience that they, or
it's just
too exhausting.
One too many impossible facts to believe in before breakfast. You know, it's sort of people need more time to get on board with some of these things. I mean, look at the people who are only just waking up now to the vax being evil. And yet a lot of these people still aren't onto the government hate you and want to kill you. Because that's just a belief too far.
Yes,
you've
where
got to
are
give
you
people on what? That they hate us and they want to kill us?
No, on the Asim Malhotra thing. You must have come across him.
No.
Okay. Asim Malhotra
is the doctor who's been an intelligent
cardiologist, and he was previously, at the beginning, he was all for, get your shots and save granny and stuff. And just recently he's spoken out and he said, look, my dad had the jab and I think I encouraged him to do so and he died. And I now realise that these we shouldn't be jabbing anybody with these experimental mRNA treatments, which is good. But then he goes on to say stuff like, but obviously all the other injections before that were great. the big pharma does generally good work and vaccines. And you're kind of thinking, well, is he a help or a hindrance? I'm agnostic on this.
You see, we're back to the controlled opposition thing again now, aren't we?
Well, a bit. Certainly my theory on that is, if you look at the SPARS document, where the John Hopkins basically wargamed the entire pandemic before it happened, published a paper in, I think, 2017, something like that, maybe 2019. Anyway, but just suspiciously close to the actual alleged outbreak. They wargame this scenario and described it in worrying detail with worrying accuracy, which makes you wonder, or not even wonder, makes you know, actually. And there's a section, page 59, where they describe the moment where people start waking up to vax injuries and how to deal with this. And what they do is the government ministers announce things like, these people, they died for their country kind of thing. They died for a good cause. And what I'm saying is that we are in the reveal stage of the fake pandemic. This is where because they knew the public were going to wake up to this in the end. And
they've got a plan for it.
Yeah. So people, I'm not suggesting that necessarily that Asim Malhotra is actually aware of what's going on, but he is nevertheless playing an important part in the reveal stage, where you get a respected mainstream medic performing a U-turn and alerting
Are they openly admitting that that this has caused deaths and injuries? I mean, I don't do any mainstream news anymore, so it's hard to know what the norms are being told.
They're not quite there yet, but I think I saw someone suggesting, I don't know whether this is true, that they are preparing the ground for the medics who push these jabs to be thrown to the wolves, because obviously they're going to be scapegoats, and it's probably mm-hmm. going to be they seem to have rigged it so that the pharma companies have indemnity. I don't know what the government's. I imagine at cabinet level and at things like SAGE committee level, they've probably scrubbed all the documents already, or they never took notes. So because they would have known this was coming as well. So mm-hmm. they've covered their tracks. So it's going to end up these poor, slightly venal, slightly stupid, slightly gullible GPs and medical practices, I think. That's a theory anyway. There are definitely going to be some sacrificial victims for this. People are going to take the hit for the team. And so that the really bad guys get off. That's my theory.
Yeah, as ever. I mean, are the Matt Hancocks of this world going to take it?
Ooh. Well, yeah. with a black Russian dildo up the arse, I hope. I mean, you just like...
but it's...
Steely Dan.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the word Steely Dan comes from. William Burroughs,
right,
I think, was describing a variety of dildos, and one of them he calls right. Steely Dan.
Okay.
Why would you call your? I knew I always hated that band, but why would you name yourself after an obscure literary dildo?
Well, I didn't know what the Doobie Brothers was for ages either. I suppose they're all these names that
we could be the Doobie Brothers,
Brothers, yeah.
The Blunt Brothers.
I'm reading at the moment Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon. So I'm going down the music rabbit hole at the moment, and just the sheer number of bands you previously loved. Even really lame-assed bands like the Turtles and what have you. It's just like, that didn't seem to be remotely political. It was just... all of it fabricated and satanic and...
What do the Turtles sing?
I knew you'd ask that, and I wish I hadn't even
mentioned it. We are the Turtles, no. We swim around. That one?
No, it's sort of...
We lay eggs on the beach and bury them with our flippers.
The Beatles type thing. I think...
All right.
Are they the ones that Paul McCartney wrote, If You Want It, Here It Is, Come and Get It? Was that them? You know the song?
How does it go?
If you want it, here it is, come and get it. No? Oh, no. Come on. Anyway.
You know...
Now there's going to be a snippet of me singing on the internet, and I've got to live with that.
Have I told you my Lou Reed story? I'm sorry, stop me if you heard something before.
When you interviewed him, and he was horrible to you.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, Lou, it'd be really good if, with this gig that you're going to do for the first time in years, if it just wasn't practiced at all, as if it was, so you come across as really raw. Did you say something like that to him?
I didn't say that to him, Dick.
Why didn't I think
that? This is a completely made-up story, whereas my story is true.
Tell me your non-made-up Lou Reed story, then.
Because just you didn't like my Turtle song. My totally true Lou Reed story goes like this. So, yeah, you're right. He did give me a really hard time. And I was floundering around wondering what to ask him about. And I asked him whether he'd liked any of the other contemporary music from his era.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, the Velvet Underground, the New York sound was the complete antithesis of the West Coast sound.
Mm.
And at that point in my life, like you, I was a massive fan of all the, like the hippie sound, like the Birds, loved Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, loved all that Buffalo Springfield and Mamas and mm-hmm. Papas and All the Leaves Are Brown and Sky Is Grey and etc. And I thought, well, come on, Mr. Misery, Mr. Grumpy, you must admit they did have some musical merit. And he was very, very dismissive. And I thought at the time. He said the one thing he liked was the kind of the detuned raga thing, the raga solo in the middle of 8 miles High. He liked that.
Right.
I don't know if you can remember it, but anyway. It is
no, good. I do. It's very clear in my mind. I would even sing it to you, but I've just done the turtle.
Anyway, and what I realise now, what I didn't realise then, was that he must have known that the whole thing was a sham. For example, that none of these children of kind of CIA operatives and senior naval commanders, and they were all the children of the military, weren't they?
Yeah, and Frank Zappa's dad being a chemical warfare expert. It's just, it beggars belief.
And Jim Morrison's father being the commander
started
of the
Vietnam War.
In the Gulf. Exactly. Yeah, right. And Stephen Stills having been one of those advisors that went into Vietnam before the war started, you know, probably working for the CIA.
About Jimi Hendrix. I mean, it was like, yeah, he was in the military reluctantly, but he was in the 82nd Airborne or something ridiculous, wasn't he? And it was like, well, you don't do that.
Which is not a unit you join if you're...
It's not a punishment unit.
No.
Yeah.
No, exactly. You're kind of quite keen if you want to... You've got to pass lots of tests, I imagine.
Mm.
So, none of them could play their instruments, or very few of them. And all the music on those albums was pretty much played by these session musicians.
By the Wrecking Crew.
By Elvis Presley's session musicians. The Wrecking Crew, exactly.
Mm.
So apologies to Lou Reed, the late Lou Reed. I totally understand where you're coming from now. Although what remains a mystery is the degree to which he, I mean, given that
I was going to say the East Coast must have had its own version of the puppeteers controlling things, and
wouldn't you love to read the East Coast version of Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon? Unfortunately, what's he called? Goldman is never going to be able to do it because he was offed, wasn't he? He must have been bumped off.
Yeah, which does give the whole thing an incredible credibility, doesn't it? An incredible credibility. Yeah, is that a tautology, Mr. English Scholar?
Probably.
Right. Okay.
No, probably. Dick, you need to get off your meeting.
This meeting is? This is me having a one-monthly pub meet-up with the old boys that I swim with, who I've now known for 20 years. And I've swum with them for all that time. And once a month, on the first Friday of the month, we have a pint. And I don't get to
see
them.
Have you red-pilled any of them?
Hmm?
Are any of them red-pilled?
I fell out with one of them over the vax, Terry. There's this old boy from the East End, and he's a Cockney Barrow boy made good, and been very big in insurance all his life. And when the vax was rolled out and we talked about it, and I told him I wasn't going to be taking it, thank you very much. He says, "What? You're mad. You're going to die." He said, "Well, if you don't want it, I'll have yours. It doesn't matter if you don't want any. There'll be more for the rest of us." I said, I don't think it works like that, Terry. But I tried not to fall out beyond the point at which we could come back. But we both tread very gently around that argument that we had. It was a terrible falling out. And it was a typical example of how I fell out with good friends. So,
yeah.
No, they are certainly not red-pilled. I enjoy their company, but I just keep away from the subjects that I know are not going to lead us anywhere good.
You stay in your lane, basically.
I stay in my lane. Yeah, good one. Good one, good. Bruh.
Well, on that hilarious
We've just passed the 1 hour mark, so we've delivered.
People are happy.
I squeezed this hour into my busy schedule.
You squeezed out that turd.
The turd of a podcast.
Yeah. Well, we'll do another one soon. It's been too long.
Are we going to talk briefly after this?
No, because I need a pee, and you've got to go off to see your old man. We'll talk later on.
Okay, right. I'll try and catch you when you're not doing interesting and important things. Okay then, brother, and lovely audience. See you all soon.
Yeah. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.